Herman Pretorius is the head of strategic communications at the Institute for Race Relations. Yesterday, Herman Mashaba of Action SA, the man who founded and is president of that party, had some pretty hectic things to say about the IRR at the time that he was mayor of Johannesburg. We'll find out from Herman what the point of the exercise was, if there ever was an exercise. And indeed, then we'll have a look at the big news that's coming out of the IRR at the moment, which is a new proposed deal, value for money deal for state expenditure, which will eliminate BEE. Herman, let's begin at the beginning. Herman Mashaba, or also Herman Mashaba, I suppose we got to speak about it correctly or pronounce it correctly, said yesterday in my interview with him that the IRR, the organization that you work for, an organization that's been with us for nearly 100 years, was actually spying on his caucus when he was the mayor of Johannesburg, the DA caucus. It was a member of the group, the WhatsApp group, which was supposed to be private, and that Helen Ziller was having secret meetings with you at the time. Hence, that was the reason why he left, or certainly contributed to why he left.
And those are the people who obviously Helen had them on their side, including Helen and the IRR getting into our WhatsApp group or caucus WhatsApp group. It's a confidential thing, and it's a DA party thing that as caucus, you have your own confidential things where you can debate and whatever, you know, like grown-up people in a boat, whatever, you know. So Helen, at the time working for the IRR, I exposed the secret meetings. Them and the IRR made a fundamental mistake sharing some of my utterances.
What's the story?
Well, one has to admire his creativity, and I'm sure that he has a bright future in political thriller writing, because it really does sound quite like an enjoyable story. I mean, I would want to read it. It is unfortunately the case that it is a bit removed from the truth. What happened was that I received screenshots from people I knew within the Joburg DA caucus who were unhappy with Mr. Mashaba's leadership. And sort of it was very much in the way of, look at this man, look at the absurd treatment and race-based referencing that he uses in talking to his own caucus. And then I tweeted in my personal capacity, I tweeted that out when he was still tweeting and not exting or whatever it might be. And that then triggered Mr. Mashaba to be quite upset. Now, looking from the outside, I can understand the idea of a conspiracy. It does seem that way. But what people must understand is that the IRR and the DA share some touch points in the sense that we both try to hold to liberal ideology, you know, basic freedom, non-racialism, the rule of law, all these good stuff. And I always say to people, the IRR writes recipes, and the DA is a restaurant. So if they take our recipes and they happen to like them, we're glad. That's our job. We write recipes and they happen to be in the restaurant business. So there are these links. I worked for the DA for a while. Helen, after leaving the DA, had a short stint with the IRR as a research fellow and then, of course, got elected back into the DA top leadership, at which point she had to leave the IRR because you can't be an elected representative and work for the IRR. So one can almost understand the conspiratorial tones, but where things get really fictitious is when Mr. Mashaba repeats these ideas that they were secret meetings and that the IRR was playing a role. I wish I was that powerful, but I was at that stage a young analyst with a slightly better hairline and little experience. And I received these screenshots and I thought, this is fascinating, a look into the party that at that time I used to support. So Mr. Mashaba is, at the very least, one can say he has a vibrant imagination.
You say at that time that you used to support. Have you switched across to Action SA now?
Yes, no, I haven't. I at this stage, I genuinely don't know who I would vote for. I think that there, in the local government elections, I live in Tswane, so I've been quite impressed by Silja Brink. So on my ballot, I might make a DA cross, but that of course depends on the campaign that lies before us. But at that stage, I must say, I was quite disengaged, disenchanted, and a bit disgusted with the DA and the direction of travel it had taken. And I must give some credit here to people like Gwen Gwenya, who in 2020 came back to be the head of the DA's policy unit and really injected solid non-racial liberal ideas back into the party that I felt under Mr. Maimane had lost some of that connection to good old classical liberalism.
Maimane is a man from this windy little town called Yaku. Sorry, other way around. Yaku's from Maimane. Yaku, we need to talk about your upgrade problem.
I don't have an upgrade problem.
Two Audis, an Opel, a Kia, and a Hyundai. Five cars, Yaku.
Denial. I just love cars. And we rebuy cars that make it so much easier for you and convenient. You sell your car. You want to try it?
Okay, just once. Turn off the cameras.
I see how this is addictive.
Take two of those. We buy cars. The easiest way to sell your car by far.
Right, so you know where you stand. You know your ideology. Helen Zille working for the IRR. So Herman was right. Herman Mashaba was right on that score, at least. He said she did work there and then she came back. She was re-elected back in, and at that point he left. So I suppose it wouldn't have been secret meetings. It would have been obvious meetings if she's actually working for the IRR.
Yes, and at that stage, she was actually planning to disengage entirely from the DA, as I understood it, that she had this experience of being targeted by the party for her tweet about colonialism, whether that was well-advised or ill-advised. The facts are that she was seen as a scapegoat for the party to be able to move on from a white party brand. And her plan was very much to leave politics, as I understand it. And then when the brouhaha around Mr. Maimane's leadership blew up, we just heard as colleagues at that time that Helen was contesting the election for the DA's, I think, federal council chair position. And she had to resign. But I remember how annoyed Helen was in that I was perceived to become involved in the trench warfare in the DA. And I was a young sort of analyst, and I happened to have these little scoops, and I posted them. And I never discussed them with Helen, and quite often she would be a bit annoyed about this fact that I was stirring in the DA. So no, Helen was a research fellow with us, but the idea that she was involved in what I did, at least, I think is a bit is fanciful. But I must say, Mr. Mashaba is entitled to his own version of events and his own recollection. But when he positions the IRR as a sort of a Guptas that captured the DA, I think he slightly embellishes. And if I remember correctly, he also didn't pitch up for the federal executive or the federal council elections that saw Helen elected. So if he wanted to stop her, it's odd that he didn't pitch to vote against her, I think.
It's interesting for those of us on the outside, when we see these layers of the onion being peeled off, it makes a lot more sense now. And the unhappiness that Herman Mashaba has with the DA and the way that his new party, Action SA, seems to be targeting the DA all the time, now makes a heck of a lot more sense. From your perspective, though, you published or are publishing Value for Money Bill, you call it. Sounds a little bit like you are a parliament of your own.
Yes, well, this year we decided to start publishing a few bills because we just thought the theory that we at the IRR operate on is battle of ideas theory. It is that if you can inject credible, reasonable, substantive arguments into the bloodstream of the body civic and body politic, then inevitably, when the next moment of flux and change arrives, your ideas will be in a good position to contest the change that will occur. And I think South Africans can look at politics over the last year or so and really see that we are in a period of change, the end of ANC domination. Earlier this year, the IR finding that the DA and the ANC were tied at effectively 30% in the polls. You know, it is a time of real change and flux, and now heading into the local government elections, we just thought, why not show what the alternative can look like? Why not take the think tank ideas that we've been working on and put them into something more concrete, like these bills? We wrote the No More Race Laws bill, which is an ambitious a law designed to repeal all race-based legislation. We published the Right to Own bill, which would do away completely with expropriation without compensation and really entrench the idea of a property-owning democracy. We published the Better Health bill, which is an alternative to the NHI. We've published the Freedom from Poverty bill, which is an alternative to BEE in its empowerment practices. And today we are publishing the Value for Money bill, which really does what it says on the tin. It is about making sure that the South African taxpayer gets value for money.
And in essence, that would mean removing the premium that legally now can be paid to BEE tenderpreneurs, companies that pitch for government business.
That is the nub of the matter. And my colleague, Gabriel Krause, who really held the pen in writing this bill, found earlier this year through his quite groundbreaking research that the South African government has a negative fiscal multiplier, meaning that for every rand we spend, or every rand the government spends, the economy actually shrinks. Now, if you have healthy government spending and expenses, you've got a positive fiscal multiplier. For every rand you spend, you're expecting to get at least 1 rand and 1 cent back in economic growth. In South Africa, that's not the case. And a key part of that is this infection of BEE on public procurement that allows the entire tenderpreneur system to operate. And by Gabriel's calculations, this premium system, if we can move away from those premiums and those markups and just move to a value for money basis, the savings from that would be enough to cut VAT to 11.5% without affecting a single rand to frontline spending. That's just, you know, those markups we're all familiar with. A laptop for a few hundred thousand or a million rand. A breathalyzer straw that's 27 rand instead of 27 cents. All of those pernickety, pernicious little elevations in the heart rate of our expenditure, that can save South Africa billions. And this bill sets out how to do that practically.
Is that the nub of the bill? Just remove the BEE premium?
Indeed. And to read the Constitution, Section 217 of the Constitution makes cost effectiveness a key component of government procurement and government spending. And Chief Justice, or former Chief Justice Zondo, in his famous Zondo report, also found that part of what had driven state capture, a core component, had been this idea that value for money wasn't the basis of these expenses, but that added components and considerations gave just enough leeway for corrupt manipulation. So if we get to transparency and cost effectiveness, honest competition, well, then we've got value for money. And people sometimes come back with the idea of, oh, so you're against transformation. Well, no, we're for real transformation and against fake transformation, because real transformation would be making sure that government spending goes to service delivery on the front lines to those people who are most desperate, most vulnerable, poor, and in South Africa, 90% black. So we can't say, let's help the tender class at the cost of ordinary black South Africans. We're saying, let's remove that calculation, let's reverse it and say where real empowerment lies is not at the deal-making level, it is at the delivery level.
So what is fake transformation?
It is essentially people using the suffering of black South Africans, made poor by apartheid, kept poor by 30 years of anti-growth policy, using that suffering to dress up procurement favoritism as empowerment. Because if we look at the mechanics of BEE, it's not really an empowerment policy. It's a procurement process policy in the main. And if we then speak to sociologists and economists and early childhood development experts, we understand that the barriers to real economic empowerment are things like malnutrition, bad housing, bad healthcare, bad education, stuff that BEE doesn't even touch in a positive way. And to the extent that BEE touches them, it compromises their delivery. So the problem with BEE is it is like the People's Democratic Republic of North Korea. What it says on the label isn't what it does in the substance. So if we can move towards actual empowerment, where money flows from the compassion of the taxpayer to the need of the vulnerable, and we can draw that direct link through a value for money chain of expenditure, that's real transformation. Fake transformation is using that suffering, using the disparities, using the suffering of black South Africans to pretend if we help the tender class in Sandton, the poor in Shoshanguve should feel better about being poor.
So it is a battle for ideas, as you say, and we're at a turning point in South Africa's history. So which political party is actually buying your message and which not?
Well, I think what is exciting is that we've really been having over the last 2 or 3 years where this bill has been simmering. Even before the GNU started, we've had some positive engagements with National Treasury. So we've got people within the ANC with whom we are working in terms of getting the numbers right. And naturally, we were very pleased to see the DA come out with its economic inclusion for all package, which has a large component of value for money, but we feel not enough. We think that value for money shouldn't just be an important consideration, it should be the prime consideration, because that's how you make sure that those who need government help most get it at the most cost-effective level. So we've got engagements with the DA, we've got engagements with the Freedom Front Plus, we try to get engagements with the IFP and the Action SA, but on the title page of the bill, we are a bit cheeky and we say that this bill isn't introduced to Parliament, it is introduced to the people of South Africa, because that's really the chamber of legislation in the country. If we can go upstream from politics and convince voters that this should be a prerequisite for voting for a better party, a better South Africa, a better future, then if we can win in the legislative chamber of public opinion, the rest is downstream from that. So we have these formal engagements, some informal engagements, but we really want to make sure that we get this bill to the public. And for example, our No More Race Laws bill has already been supported by more than 17,000 South Africans, and we published it earlier this year. So we are perhaps building a political coalition, but we certainly aren't a political party.
Herman, how strongly camped against these ideas are those who you obviously would think, who you didn't even mention, MK and EFF, and I guess parts of the ANC? How do they justify, if they do have an opposite view, which they clearly appear to have, in your engagements with them, or do they not even bother to engage with you?
Well, I must say I have been surprised and impressed by the level of engagement we've gotten from backbench MPs from all parties. It really is a testament to the fact that there is still some instinct of civil service in parties that, you know, we might oppose from a liberal perspective, as the IRR. But what is fascinating about MK and EFF specifically is that they really try to talk the talk when it comes to giving the poor the benefit of policy. And if we hold them to their own standards, we can, I think, make some progress in getting onto a common ground area where we say, look, BEE hasn't helped the poor. We've got MK people acknowledging that. We've got the EFF saying that out loud quite often. We've got Kgalema Motlanthe, Pravin Gordhan, Gwede Mantashe. There are a whole range of politicians willing to say that BEE hasn't worked. Now, where the IRR's job comes in is to say, but look, there's an alternative. And in our polling, and if we look at the polling from credible organizations like the SRF, we really see a frustration with the lack of options coming from the people of South Africa. They don't like what's going on, but they aren't ready to endorse an alternative because the alternative case hasn't been made yet. And it is in making that alternative manifest, tangible, a bit more real, perhaps a bit more gimmicky, that our engagements with backbench MPs, I think, have been truly encouraging in a way, not necessarily fruitful, but encouraging. And the important thing is encouragement is sometimes the best you can do because this is the long game. We're an organization heading into our 100th year of existence in a few years. We know, and I've had to learn from my senior colleagues like the late, great John K. Berman and the still with us, the great Anthea Jeffrey, that this is a long game. You don't try to rush this. You build the relationships, you make the arguments, and you get the people, the ordinary people, on side, and that's how change happens.
We all got to make changes in our approach to life, approach to ideas, in a way that works for us. Herman Pretorius is the head of strategic communications at the Institute for Race Relations. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.